Okay, are you ready to talk about bees and not stop?
You better believe I am. I might get distracted. I'm sure it won't be too unbearable.
No. You've already failed. You already failed the one thing we used to do. Oh, man.
Hey, it wasn't to, like, make puns about bees. It was just, you know... Dude, like, shut up. That's what. Shut up.
Okay.
See, if you consider shut up.
Do you want to tell our listeners the story that you told me online yesterday about bees?
No.
Okay.
Stop my fucking habit of just answering rhetorical questions. It's annoying me more than anyone else. Just someone's like, hey, can I use your toilet? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, that's such an annoying joke. Why am I doing it? Anyway, I would be delighted to. Bumblebees. But first, a little bit about chromosomes. And I'm trying to remember exactly what it, okay, so the whole Hymenoptera order of insects, which is wasps, ants, and bees, all have this weird fucking thing where if they have something, I can't remember exactly how the chromosomes work, but they don't do an XY thing, they do like an X and XX thing. Anyway, it works out to mean that they are 75% related to their sisters and only 50% related to their kids because of how it works.
Okay.
I think because they get two genes from their mother and one gene from their dad or something like that. So they wind up being more, I mean, two chromosomes. So they wind up being more related to their sisters than their own kids because when they have a kid, they only give 50% of their, I can't remember exactly how it works. The important bit is they're more related to their sisters than they are their own kids. This presumably pre-adapted them for fucking social living. Because ants, bees, and wasps have all kind of developed independently, hive societies, colony societies. I mean, they don't, there's ants, bees, and wasps, they all have non hive stuff, which is because that's why you have worker bees, that, you know, by like looking after their sister's eggs, which is the queen. Fuck, I'm remembering this so badly, because is a worker bee the sister of the queen? Because it doesn't make sense. Anyway, that make their mother more like their mother. Anyway, I should not try the backstory because it's been too long since I read the book. But basically, from one of it is they're more likely to want to look after their fucking the queen's kids than they are their own, because more DNA, more of their DNA is going to get passed on that way than if they have kids on their own, which is weird. But like, if they can like have the option of doing both things, you know, having their own kids and also raising the kids of the queen, then that's even better. So like the queen, but in most bees,
one subject.
No, just all the angles, and I'm tired, and I mean, fucking dragging BlackBerry around all day. And my brain's just trying to start the fucking explanation from all different angles at once. Let's just start. I'm gonna start again. I just got from bumblebees. Okay, so bumblebees, unlike fucking regular bees, their hive only lasts a year. They don't have wax cells, and they normally like colonize a little clay burrow, like a bunny burrow or a little hole in the ground. The queen starts it. I can't remember if she starts it at the start of winter or the start of spring. Anyway, she lays her first clutch of eggs and sets up a little clay pot. She gathers pollen, puts the pollen in the pot, and that makes honey, and that's their little fucking honey stash. It's just this little clay pot. first round of workers are always like slightly smaller because she's got way less resources. And all the bees, like, they go out, get pollen, put in the pot, and they all live off that and raise their kids, you know, for her and stuff. But towards the end of the year, as she starts getting older, all the workers start going, you know, they kind of know shit's going to fucking fall apart. Like, the queen only lives a year, so they try and, like, secretly lay their own eggs. Like, I think, unlike honeybees and other bees, they aren't sterile. They're just, like, suppressed somehow by an expression of the queen, either a pheromone expression or maybe just a physical expression, as in the queen will kill them if she sees them start laying the eggs. And then towards the end of the year, they start trying to sneak their own little eggs. So the queen starts trying to kill them, and which she does, generally, because she's bigger, and she starts trying to kill their babies, which she does because she's bigger. But there's all these worker bees, and they're all trying to fucking stash their own little princesses in the corners while the queen's trying to lay her own eggs, and no one's fucking cleaning anything or throwing out bodies or doing anything, so it's all falling apart and getting all diseased and stuff. And the queen has, like, 20 or 30 fucking battles to the death with various workers and, like, freshly born worker usurper princesses, and she's getting increasingly worn down and bad. Eventually, like, she dies, and all the workers die. And, like, the remaining, like, newborn queens, whether the original queens or the usurper queens, they all kind of, like, leave the hive and set up the new things, and it just kind of leaves this kind of decaying mess, you know, of dead bees and disaster and wounds and stuff. And I think I want to make an adventure sometime that's like that, some kind of, like, big monster, you know, with all these different chambers and stuff, and all these, like, they're all trying to, like, lay eggs, and these are just bigger version of the monster, like, trying to track down these other monsters and kill them, and it's all, you know? And it's, like, probably too tough for the party, but, like, if you wait later, it's getting increasingly worn out by killing other versions and stuff. And have them being kind of, like, intelligent monsters or something, so it's all, like, decay nobility and stuff, you know? Having jewels or something. I just love the whole kind of, like, it lasts for a year and then towards the end everyone starts looking out for their own, you know?
Apocalypse bees.
It's a good example. It's a good example of how most altruistic or symbiotic relationships in nature actually, like, a sort of careful balance of mutual exploitation, you know? And that, like, given half the chance, they can kind of suddenly swing in one animal's favour. You know?
Yeah, I do.
You know? And, like, Bumblebee's an example of, like, you know, like, the sisters, you know, look after their kid, their sisters look after, I mean, the, you know, the workers look after the eggs and they don't have babies of their own, but towards the end they're like, fuck it, I want kids of my own, you know? And the queen's not like, oh yeah, whatever, that's cool, you know? She's like, I'm gonna fucking kill your babies. I lay the eggs.
One thing it reminded me of when you mentioned it was, like, a matriarchal Mort d'Arthur, like the end of the kingdom, where everyone's increasingly just like, fuck it, we're gonna do what we want, this isn't gonna last, and then everyone kind of mutually tears society apart for various complex reasons of their own, leaving basically a battlefield with people picking over the decaying bodies. Plus, it's got mother-daughter mutual murder battles in it.
Maybe that's the story, the real story of King Arthur, was that there's some kind of horrible dream or something, and then they have, like, this cycle of, like, kingdomness, and then towards the end, like, all the, like, worker bees start, like, laying different, like, mimic versions of the King Arthur legend. It's like, you know, like, the queen bee only wants one version of the Queen Arthur fucking legend go on, but then all their workers kind of, like, want to do their own spin, and so, like, creating, like, they're all, like, creating these, like, miniature kingdoms, you know, miniature King Arthur tales, and then there's, like, giant Queen Arthur is destroying all the kingdoms and stuff, and then it's all happening in, like, human dream mimic space or something, you know?
I think there's probably going to be a Grant Morrison comic with that as the that as the basic idea. I was thinking a lot about the different King Arthur, but no, we can't talk too much about that because I have to bring it back to bees. That was the one rule that I set at the beginning of this conversation. Everything has to be about bees. But yeah, I was thinking about that.
Rules. The rules. Do what I want. I think we just talk about all kinds of dumb shit to bees. And since we already brought King Arthur to bees, we can talk about King Arthur a bit.
Okay. I was thinking about all the different, like, different versions of the King Arthur legend and the kind of, like, weird historical space they exist in, because like even like the basic legend is still someone taking oral stories that persist from like the sixth century, almost 1,000 years later, and rewriting them with like medieval technology. So the original, there are two references in the history of the world to someone called Arthur, and there is like, that's not surprising because in the Dark Ages of Britain, there's like literally two bits of paper that exist to describe the entire, there's two written documents, and one of them is a guy called Gildas the Wise, who was a very, 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 very angry Romano-British priest who basically wrote a Daily Mail article about Britain in like the sixth century, and it was all about how the Romano-British were a bunch of like perverted losers who were shagging their sisters and having multiple wives, and that's why the kingdom was lost. And the other one, I think, is just this like this fragmentary like date description in like a Welsh chronicle, and all they say is like the warlike Arthur fought a battle here. And that's it, basically. That's the entire written confirmation of that guy. Everything else is just, like, legendary. So, there's, like, that version, which is about some, like, Mad Max post-Roman guy beating the shit out of, like, the biggest battle in the whole of Britain was probably had around 2,000 people in it, or maybe 4,000. That was to decide the fate of the entire kingdom, because that's how many people you could get together in this fucking shithole of a wreck.
I won there.
And then, weird thing, the legends like disappear off to Brittany, they get rewritten by French people, so there's more romance in them. Then the English finally get enough money so that they can steal back their legends. They've got like enough crap they can make books. And then they take some of the romance out, add more fighting, and they give everyone medieval technology and armour, and like guns come in towards the end of Malory's. That's where our version starts, the written version, and even that is a fucking insane coagulation of different legends held by different people. And I was kind of imagining like if there was an actual idea space where all of these existed, like all the different continuities, and like a comic book, yeah, like a Grant Morrison or like a Marvel thing, where you go, I was imagining the demiplane of British history where all of the different authors exist, like all of like the weird Anglo-Saxon version, the old Romano-British version, the medieval version, the French version, where everyone's just kind of like being winsome and philosophical and romantic.
That's kind of like the opposite of the Elemental Plane of Fire, in the sense that the name sounds like it's the most boring place on earth, but it actually be really interesting. You know, like Elemental Plane of Fire kind of sounds really exciting, but then it's just, I don't know, until like Inner Planes of Phoenix came out, it was just like fire, so it wasn't that interesting. Even though like fire generally makes things interesting, but a plane of just fire was kind of like, oh, you know. Well, the different plane of British history is like, oh, you know, and you go there and it's just fucking fights and people, giants, and you know,
yeah,
shit.
We better hope we can make the plane of fire interesting, because I haven't written most of that yet for BFR, but hopefully it will be good.
The plane of Phoenix had some cool stuff. Though we'll just have to not do anything that got done in that. I mean, I don't know. I think I liked most about the Inner Planes appendix is when they had elemental planes kind of, like they had ordered other elemental planes, and they had these kind of like weird little each conditions and stuff, and some of those were kind of cool, like the, I think the plane of, because the elemental plane of ash, we've ordered the elemental plane of the fucking the negative material plane, you know? It was just like, you know, an endless plane of ash, and then there was this killing void, and then there was nothing. Maybe there was radiation or something. I don't know. No, it just sounded cool. I think because there was a feeling of down and up on each of the elemental planes. Like, the middle of them was just like a blob, and it went forever in all directions. The edges of them were kind of cool because they kind of had it down and up, and you could go, you know, if you went up, as in away from the plane, then you got to another plane, but if you stayed down, you went to a plane, and just kind of had these cool kind of sense of like standing on these up surfaces, like looking into like the sky, except the sky was actually like the plane of fire or the plane of pure energy or something. I can't recall any particularly amazing ones. Oh, there's another version of a hook bird. can you see it?
It's horrible.
I'm trying to like suspect. I want them to look like you look at it and you immediately go, that is a thoroughly useless, if not pleasant, bird. Like a bird that, if someone told you it was endangered, you'd go, good. You just look at the picture and go, I'm good. Good.
Those reminds me of those dinosauroids that you linked me to on your Tumblr. No, you didn't link me to. You linked me to your Tumblr, and they were on there, and I saw them, and then I followed the links to the guy who invented them.
Yeah.
And he's the same guy who did the first few issues of Prophet, the ones that I really liked, and that had all that weirdly specific far future evolutionary stuff for all the monsters. Have you seen that?
I haven't read Prophet. In fact, all I know about it is it's got art in it, and it's called Prophet, and it's a comic.
Yeah.
That's literally all I know about it. And some people have mentioned it on my feed.
Like, there's different artists for each part of it, so the mood of it is different, but the opening scenes, opening issues, are like a guy waking up in mega future Earth and finding loads of weirdly evolved creatures and human beings being kept as, like, ape slaves. And the creatures that he finds in the societies are all very, very carefully worked out in a kind of Dorian Kindersley kind of way, like a lot like the guy who invented the dinosauroids. Like, someone who has read your books and would never create a limb juncture that wouldn't work in real life. Bees, how can I get this back to bees? And in Prophet, some of the creatures live in giant hives with a complex gender system, and the guy cuts one of their skins off and walks around in it for like a month, hiding in the hive and eating their honey, because they can only smell each other, so they just think he's one of them.
There's like so many fucking, I don't know, so many, there's just like all these animals that have evolved specifically to exploit like colony organisms like ants. Which is an interesting example of like how like broadleafs, the angiosperms. No, wait, gymnosperms. Angiosperms. Evolved flowers, and then suddenly there was fucking pollen, and then there was this entire new reservoirs, and then you got pollinators, and then you know, and then you've got bees because of pollination, and then because you've got bees, you've got shit that can live in beehives. Now that I think about it, I can't think of too many animals that simply exploit bees as opposed to ants. I'm thinking more of ants. Because there's like spiders that pretend to be ants and they hold their like two front legs up like antenna. And they're like, I'm an ant! I'm an ant! You know? And it works. And they'll get like a dead ant and then they'll like go, you know, because ants like always pick up dead ants and put them in the garbage pile because they're like, because that's how they resolve issues of death. And your affinity, they're just like, I'm going to die one day, so I'll put these bodies in the garbage pile. And then they just kind of like hold it up, and then that's like, oh, I better get that dead body. And the fire just kind of moves it slightly out of range, and it keeps doing that until the ant's like wandered off too far away from another ant, and then the ant that's actually a spider just killed me. And another ant. Killing thing, which is another spider that just covers itself in the ant smell and just hides in the and it just is a corridor of the ant hives and stuff, you know? So the ants went around going, I'm glad it's just us ants around here. And other ants don't know because they all look identical to each other, so, you know, that's what mindless homogeny does. It makes you vulnerable to, like, lurking spiders.
I can't help thinking about Tumblr when you say that.
and there's a beetle that's evolved its arse to look like an ant. Like, it just got its arse beat all the way over it to look like an ant, and there's this beetle hiding underneath it.
Oh man.
And there's this fucking amazing maggot that's evolved to look like a fucking tank maggot. It's just like, more like a chiton or something, you know, like a light disc, you know?
Yeah.
And it just kind of like, just kind of goes rrrr, straight into the ant hive. And he's going, brrr, I'm just starts eating ant babies, and all the ants just pile on it, and they fucking can't get under it, like, and they can't bite through its top skin, you know? It just must be so frustrating, you know? Just like someone, you know, playing, like, I don't know, multiplayer Doom or something, and someone uses the fucking invincibility cheat. You're like, ugh! You know, and the guy who's killing you wrong because he's invincible, it's like, here's this blood, what do you mean? I'm having so much fun. It's great. I'm eating all your bed and you guys aren't doing anything.
Right. That does make me think of two things, like social media in general, and I remember in biology the first day that I worked out that we are in fact colony organisms, and that I am just a colony of cells that have been tricked into hanging out with each other for a limited period of time, and occasionally some of them freak out and say they're not going to play anymore.
Mitochondria, how they've got their own DNA, and then plants have got the similar trick with chloroplasts, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of creepy. Well, not necessarily creepy, it's just... I mean, it makes me feel good about living in garbage, basically. I'm just like... It's just like, you know, like, clean is just such a fuzzy concept, you know? Like, you know, like, even the boundaries of my own physical existence are fuzzy. Like, who am I to, like, not have my clothing everywhere?
I'm also imagining your parents and the conversations you had about cleaning your room.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I busted out too many of those lines. I think we just didn't do it. and they just tried to punish or reward me, but neither worked because I just kind of worked it out. I wouldn't have to do as much. Like if they went, you can't go to this thing, and I went, oh, if I just don't care about that, then I won't feel sad that I can't do this thing. Or they'll go, we'll give you more pocket money. And I go, if I don't care about getting more pocket money, then I won't have to do the thing I want.
Oh, no.
It was possibly Buddhist, and it's possibly... I've actually noticed it a few times in an emergency coping situation. I will find myself going, I don't actually really care about this. And it's an instinct I sometimes have to stop myself. You know, if you like, the house is on fire, and your instinct is... Maybe I don't care about burning to death. That's the point, right? It's kind of like it's kind of the opposite of some people I know who, like, when in response to emergency, will try and like rationalize it away. You know, like be like, I'm sure there's a valid reason the person is walking towards this machete or something. You know, you know, it's like I'm sure. You know, like I don't. You know, they're fine. It's fine.
I'm trying to work out if I have a response to emergency. I think it vacillates between pompous bullying of other people into some kind of vacant order, or just freezing and waiting to see what happens.
Yeah.
This isn't either I'm doing nothing or I'm telling other people that they should be doing something, but I'm not going to do anything myself.
I can't think of a cool rhyming scheme, like, you know, the fight or flight, or tend to befriend, or, be little or do little. You could say it's more be little or do little instinct.
No, I don't think it is actually real, but there is a Brazilian website that does say that Avril Lavigne was killed, or died of suicide in around 2000 and something, and was replaced by double, and they've got loads of pictures of them counting her freckles. And like the hairs in her eyebrows, and saying they've changed position.
The Brazilian people not have freckles because freckles like come and go, and eyebrow hairs also come and go.
Also, someone was enough into Avril Lavigne enough into her music enough that they detected a deep change in the mood of her music at a certain point, and decided this could only be accounted for by her death and then replacements because she wasn't the same person anymore.
She's an authentic artist, you know, who would never like compromise her. Like,
exactly. Avril wouldn't compromise, so she must be dead.
Yeah, that also sounds like a weird emergency, like crisis. You know, like when faced with like an unpleasant reality, just meet some fucked up conspiracy involving body doubles.
That actually sounds like that's just schizophrenia, which tends to make things worse, which is, there's a deep sense of threat coming from everywhere. What could it be? A, I've got something wrong with my brain, or B, everyone is a robot.
Yeah.
You tend to go with B eventually. I feel like I'm being watched continually and it won't stop. Why? A, something wrong with my brain. B, I'm being watched continually. No one ever believes there's anything wrong with their brain.
No, I think you're at the start, it's like acid, like when you first start tripping, you're kind of like, I think I'm tripping, you know, things feel a bit weird. But then like 5 hours in, you're kind of like going, nah, man, maybe I am an alien, you know, like it just kind of wears you down. impression, you know, when you hear people like, you know, they go, you know, try and get psychological help because they're like, I'm hearing voices, I know they're not real. And then after a while, some people are like, oh, no, like, maybe they are real, you know.
There was a guy I knew in Lancaster, an Irish guy, who apparently he'd come from a tiny island on the coast of Ireland, and he'd got in trouble with some gangsters. I don't know how he met them in that place, but apparently he used to do way too many drugs. And one day we heard him, he saw him, he told us a story that he had been doing a cocktail of drugs, and he'd woken up and he'd realised that he was inside the Matrix, and everyone was inside the Matrix, and we were all just there frozen with wires on our heads. Yeah. And then he knew that was the truth now, and then he just walked away, and then we never saw him again. Ever. Well, he just disappeared. No one knew where he went to.
Well, obviously, you got to have the Matrix, bitch.
Yeah, he just broke up. Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah. He, like, unplugged himself and woke up in a fucking vat, you know? With appalling security. And then put all them humans in those glass vials, and then they forget to fucking lock the door.
Well, that's kind of like a hive, which brings us sort of back to the one thing we're meant to be talking about.
I feel like those are some shitty robots in the Matrix. I feel like most robot overlords controlling the Earth are shitty. Even the ones that are doing it today, I feel like they can fucking, you know, be a bit more organized about it. These. Do we really want to talk about bees? I feel like I can bring interesting topics around to bees better than I can just start cold talking about bees.
Yeah. I was thinking of the robot overlords thing about, but that's in stories. Nothing can, no one can ever be competent because everything has to advance towards an end goal, which is like the end has to be exciting, which means things have to go wrong. So it's hard to have a story about people who are competent at their jobs. Because we just watched The Martian, and that's a story about people who are generally competent at their jobs, but even at the end, things have to go to shit for no particular reason, so you have to get, like, a big third act reveal.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes that you'll do a story of, like, someone who's hyper-competent, and then is just hyper-competent, you know? Like, I mean, I guess that's Superman, you know, like, early stories of Superman, and it kind of runs out, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is a novelty, or, like, have ongoing stories about super competent and amazing solving of problems.
I think don't they start off with, like, the main thing about an early Superman story is that people don't realise how good Superman is, and so they have to be like, oh, we're going to win this, and the Superman turns up and goes, no, I can do this thing that you didn't realise.
Yeah. Fuck, I hate that fucking Serifia Heroes thing when it's like the writer's just like, maybe the superpower can do this other fucking thing then.
I do have a DK.
You know, super speed means I can, like, vibrate through walls, and you're like...
I do have a loathing for, like, poorly defined superpowers. And conspiracies as well, in fiction.
I would like a fucking physics-heavy video game where you're the Flash, but... and it's like, well, you're not actually the Flash, but you're someone of super speed, and you have Flash's ability to, like, not instantly catch fire. But all other physics is plausible, so you're trying to solve everyday problems, or even problems, and you can go really fast, but that means you have incredible amounts of fucking mass when you're doing it. So if you're like, I will run really fast and catch that baby, you smash into the baby at 6,000 like kilometers per hour, and also the sonic boom takes out all the fucking windows in the area. So, like, when you're really fast, like, time moves really, slowly, so you kind of like can watch, you like, you're running and the like pavement is just like destroyed, and like stuff is breaking around you, and you're doing everyday things, and just like you have to deal with them. As soon as you start running above like 50 kilometers an hour, like you're going to be destroying everything you fucking touch. You're like running near something, you're having these shockwaves coming from you, you know? And even just the sand ducks potential of just like being able to run at 6,000 kilometers an hour for a fucking crowded city, you know? Just, you know, like shit's just. They're like, like up the ears, like literally igniting around you from the fucking speed you're running as you're doing it. It's just happening like really slowly, like, you know, like cars just slowly like drifting up and completely like that would be amazing.
That's not really a game, that's just you fantasizing about destroying a major city, isn't it? Really?
Well, I feel like video games are always about destroying a major city.
That's true.
I have lots of ideas for video games. But making video games sounds really boring. any media of delay between ideas and actualization of the ideas.
Right? Yes, even a second is enough.
I struggle with music. And I think sculptural and drawing art works for me because I don't actually have an idea. Like, I'm just like, oh, I wonder what I'm drawing. I don't know yet. And then, like, a drawing shows up, like, you know, most of the time I'm just watching myself draw. And same with sculpture, I'm like, I'll have ideas, but it's always reactive to, like, what's appearing before me, so it's, you know, it's always interesting. But then, like, music, times that have gone, okay, I've got to kick them, I've got the sample, and I want to do something with the sample, it's just frustrating. And I can do it, but I just notice, like, you know, months can go by before I get around to doing it, because it's just not the natural process for me to kind of find myself doing.
Have you made any more music since you finished your cut-up album?
No. Basically. I had a few jams and sort of played around with samples and I've got to sort of set up and take everything out and set it up again. And, you know, I've got a friend who's doing like a noise music. Like an electronic. No, it's not like, it's like noise art composition kind of course. Free. Something. Anyway, she can circuit me and she's going to make me a glitched up keyboard. And I think I want to have a little bit back into it because I kind of needed something else to kind of make it reach the kind of limit of what I wanted to do. Yeah. Piles of tapes in my sampler and I kind of wanted to bring a keyboard with as well. Well, I'll learn to sing, but that's really hard, so keyboard is really important.
Have you seen the advancement in, like, the technology of OSR adventure video fucking trailers? Someone's done one where they've created, like, a 3D version of the dungeon and moved through it in a kind of old-school PC scrolling way during the fucking trailer.
Wow.
It's like, great, how'd you even beat that?
Just do it, except you have a cooler 3D Or you get all your friends to dress up like in the meatball and fucking act out the scenes. I kind of wanted to do that in Dunedin because I had some people that I could probably get really into it, and I just kind of wanted to have all these shots of like shopping trolleys on fire and stuff.
I would fully support you in doing that from where I am. If I had money, I would get on a plane and help you do that.
One day
we'll set fire to parts of Dunedin in the course of making like a fucking an art lab.
Then we just fucking push the boundaries of what wants.
Local man arrested claims to be being of pure fire. 500 dying plays.
Yeah. Oh, you like do it in Australia as well, so it's like, yeah, like, I'd have started a bushfire.
First we need to stop the fire, then just shoot around it. And we'll keep moving. Imagine people in massive costumes just running away from the fire when it gets too close. Yeah, we're on the plane of fire. Fuck. Run. Just do Borges and do a making of documentary about an imaginary film.
Yeah.
It went horribly wrong. What else do I know about bees? I know that Napoleon liked bees. Yeah, he was obsessed with them. He had like, because he had like, you know, we were talking about people who hear voices. Well, having a titanic amount of military power is basically a lot like hearing voices. Because you start off and you're like, well, I'm just a normal person. I'll probably build some kind of functional government when this is all done. And then after like a year and a half, you're like, no, maybe I am the emperor. Let's check and see if I'm related to the ancient kings of France. Oh, I am! What a shock! I think he used bees as a symbol of his imperial might.
Wait, how did he research? He just kind of asked some scope. Am I related to like all these people?
I think that's pretty much what he did, yeah. He was like, he found someone and was like, I'm named for Napoleon. Am I related to like the figures of our legendary past? And it turned out the answer was yes. Surprisingly.
I don't know if you saw that link to that Twine game where you play like Cinderella and you're infiltrating like a French rich person's house in revolutionary era French, and it's just like a pick-apart game, but the cool thing is Cinder has only one expression all the way through, so you're like stealing chandeliers with the fan expression that you're like beating people up and like, you know, like getting arrested and stuff.
What is the expression?
But just kind of like an bored, unimpressed teenager, just like.
Okay.
And to bring it back about fire, there's a bit in it where you're stuck dancing with the one person and you have to get out of it, and you can get out of it by pushing some candles over to like set someone's wig on fire. And then everyone's like, oh, that person's on fire, and then you run away. And there's like the calcium. Regard for someone else and their skin. You need skin, otherwise, like, your muscles are visible and then you can't have tattoos. I've got an ad's nearly done. I'm just drawing hook words at the moment. I've just got fucking pages and pages of dumb looking words. I can't draw more than one twice.
Maybe that it's not a species, maybe it's just all birds in that zone are fucking horrible, so people just refer to them as the same thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a kind of like trans species symbiosis where all the birds just agree to be fucking horrible forever and to help each other in that regard. So any bird they meet is just fucked.
They could just not be birds. I mean, they could be like, you know, like some commercial, like you're a pet. Neuroteraxis or whatever, you know, one of those missing link birds or something, you know, and they're all just different species of that, and they all have a secret hookie, like, hook on their like, feather wing, and so they all get called hot birds because their birds are hooks.
That's quite cool.
They're all shitheads. They're all just fucking shitheads.
What do you think about, like, a quasi-parrot-esque bird song thing where the birds just scream swear words all the time, just continually? You listen to the jungle, all you hear is them going, fuck! Fuck you!
Should have been birds, and maybe they've got like a thing where they never, for some reason, they never had a pre-adaption for bird song, and they just calls are horrible, like. whatever makes, like, you know, normal fucking birds have all kinds of calls, they just have like, ah!
Yes, that should definitely be the case. The morning chorus.
The only thing that sings is like is little head spiders or something. There's something not nice singing. It's like, oh, you know there's a little head spider around and it can be disguised as anything.
I love the idea as the sun comes up, the whole jungle just goes...
Say tillies that like all kinds of musical noises. They just horrible kind of dissonant noise they like get excited by and like latch onto. So people swearing or screaming. You know, so your mate falls out of a tree and screams before he hits. And then like, next month all the birds are imitating his scream.
I suppose the sound of a human being screaming would mean there was a dead human being nearby and therefore food would be available, so it would just mimic it and then the scream would spread out. So if you ever hear like the birds echoing back a scream, you know someone somewhere has died.
Yeah.
You could just follow the bird song to the centre of the fucking event.
And then people would be glad to burn the whole place down.
Yeah.
The birds fly away.
To somewhere else.
That's like, and then, like, you know, fire goes out and the birds fly back. just make fucking fire burning noises and noises of people smack crackling stuff.
I suppose as the birds flew away, they would make the sounds of a giant conflagration, so wherever they flew it would be like there was a giant fucking firestorm above you in the sky and that would terrify the shit out of the local, of like anyone nearby.
Yeah. And just like, and also like post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, just keep triggered by the triggered by birds.
Why are they
kind of like earthquakes in Christchurch? Well, like Christchurch, you know, there's a big earthquake, and then there's like, you know, like 4 months of aftershocks. Just constant like, you know, everything's shaking. Everyone would be like, ugh, and like relive it. And like, you know, even even though they kind of knew that there wasn't going to be another bad quake, it just still made them think that there was going to be another bad quake, and lots of people just kind of like moved out of Christchurch, you know? They just couldn't handle the aftershocks afterwards.
I remember a guy saying once he was in, like, in the 80s, before the Berlin Wall came down, he was walking through a shopping centre and suddenly the 3-minute nuclear warning alarm went off that they'd never heard before, and everyone in the shopping centre just froze and everyone just looked at each other for like a minute. No one knew where to go because no one knew what the fuck to do, and then suddenly the alarm stopped and everyone just went, oh, okay, it was a mistake, and kept going.
Fuck it. What the fuck does a 3-minute alarm mean to do? Like, you've got 3 minutes to, like, work out how to survive a nuclear bomb. And,
just start digging really quickly. Just put on, like, 20 coats. Really big hat.
It was, like start ripping lead off a chair, you know, like, just wrapping it around yourself. Wrap yourself in tin foil, and like, you know, legs the blast.
You'd be like a baked potato, literally. That'd be quite interesting for people who found you. Okay.
Especially if the people that found you were giant bees, because they would be like, hey, these people are giant, like, made of tinfoil.
Nice segue. the smoothest possible juncture.
Did I tell you about the time I got to have a go at beehiving? Beekeeping?
You haven't told me about it.
What?
You didn't tell me about it, no.
These bees, oh my god. I just drew one of them. I just done a new way of drawing them with birds. Now that it's like they're not actually birds. They're just kind of horrible reptile. Anyway, I can make them look even worse. anyway, bees. A guy used to live here, has got some hives here still, because this is, like, kind of, I don't know, well, it's just got lots of green, like, forested areas still, because it's got so many hills, so there's heaps of bits where people can't be fucked building houses, and it just turns into, like, native forest again. And Ara Valley's got lots of that, so around our property is just kind of, like, weed trees and native trees and stuff, so it's a good place to put hives, because, you know, like, there's so many people around. And anyway, I came home one day, and he was, like, kind of lying. He was sitting, not quite lying, but kind of, like sprawled, with his face kind of all puffed up, you know? And I'm like, oh, are you okay? And he's like, oh, yeah, I just, you know, just got some tiny bunch, you know? And he told me the story, basically. Because he originally got the hives of his ex-girlfriend, and, you know, and she wanted, like, the smoker, the device that, like, makes smoke to, like, chill out the bees, because bees get all sleepy smoke happens. I don't know why. And, you know, he didn't have that. And he didn't have this good beekeeper helmet. He just said, like, I should get one. And he was like, ah, I'll be fine not having a smoker or, you know, he'll be right. And so it was just before winter kicked in, so he wanted to give them a whole bunch more food so they could, like, you know, survive for winter. So he's putting the hive together and he's put the sugar tray and the bee tray on and he's putting the thing and he's just going to put the lid on, but it doesn't sit properly. And they're a lot more lively because, you know, he kind of smoked. I say to him, and he's like, this is okay. And then he, like, has to bang the lid on to get it on. And at that point, they kind of went from a little bit more lively to fucking angry. And they just, enough of them around, they started getting hurt and got on his head and stung him, and he was getting stung a bit too many times, and then he kind of fucking bailed. And he had some antihistamine, so, you know, his face gets a bit puffy or, you know, losing the ability to breathe. And then he's like, shit, I still got to actually put the hive back together because I didn't put the lid properly on and it'll be exposed to elements. And I was like, oh, I'll have a go. I don't know. It seems something terrifying and I always wanted to try it. we got, like, masked up, but this time I made sure that, like, we wrapped way more fucking duct tape around all the holes and the overalls. Tape to kind of put down better, you know, and then got around, and it's kind of fun. I mean, bees always keep landing on the front of the hood, and you kind of always think they're underneath the hood, and there's like a man of panic there, where you're like, oh god, they're inside the fucking hood. Like, hey, the bees are on the outside of this thing I'm wearing, to like, oh god, I'm trapped inside this small fucking room I'm carrying with me with bees. And it was actually really complicated putting it together, so I had to keep on like walking back and forth going, okay, now which, now where do I put this? And you'd be like, put it near the other thing, and I'd go back and go, which trap does it go? And, you know, and there'd be bees around me all the time. And the weird thing is how they, not really that weird, but the kind of ominous thing is how they seek out this. So like, I had these thick leather 8 or 9 bees in the webbing of the gloves, like between each finger, that all fucking hang out there and just start stinging there.
Ooh.
So they kind of like dip. Like, you know, places are just completely cunty to get stung by, you know, and the bees just kind of like fucking work out where those are, and they all just pile in there. And I only got stung when I was walking back after finishing it, you know, and it was like, did you get stung? And I was like, no. And then I was like, got this little stab in my knee, and I was like, oh wait, yes. There's a hole in the knee that a couple had gotten in that I got stung like, and then it's like some got in my gloves, but I kind of pulled my hand out of the glove, so they're just kind of like running around the inside of the glove trying to find my fingers, and then they put my fingers out, and I was like, ha ha ha. And then I had to walk around for like half an hour just trying to like shake bees off me, and like occasionally like put them off one by one before I could like take, go inside and take it off, because if you go inside and you're covered in bees, you take off your thing. There's bees in your house and you don't have your bee armor. And, you know, but you have to like walk around just going, okay, bees, you know, go back to your hive now, I'm not near it, you know. But yeah, and then just, it was fun just seeing the gloves just being full of stings and stuff, and you know, just how cool would have been if I wasn't wearing any layers.
You should make that's your adventure, like instead of being like human beings versus a giant insect thing, everyone gets given bee steeds, so you're bee knights, and the giant thing you're trying to kill is like a giant ape-like creature with armor. Yep. It's trying to run around and fuck and yep. kill other ape-like creatures' armor, and you have to like jump on it and try and sting it to death somehow.
Yeah. Like the dungeon, or the dungeon is like, you know, like the topology of the human body, you know, and a particular human body. So you're kind of like running around the human body, you know, like, and for some reason, maybe like if you're running directly on the body, it takes you longer to get around the fine areas, but if you're flying. Flying, it's quicker, but then you risk getting slaughtered because you can be seen, you know? Yeah. Running around, you know?
Bee Knights versus Ape Godzilla, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Did Godzilla fight anything ape-like? Or did he just fight weird insect things?
No, there was a Godzilla versus King Kong, but I don't think it was, like, a particularly legitimate-looking Godzilla or a legitimate-looking King Kong. And I think there was a knockoff of King Kong that Godzilla fought. I mean, I could Google it right now, but I think it's like this, you know, looking wildly.
No, because Godzilla has to be the hero. Godzilla has to fight something even further. Like, I think the rule is that the further away something is on the evolutionary scale from us, the more evil it is. So Godzilla's already a fucking reptile, so he has to fight insects and possibly octopi and aliens and robots, but he can't fight anything like a mammal.
Yeah. What about, now you thought that weird fucking dog thing before, and are robots further away on the evolutionary?
That doesn't really count, I don't know. Let's assume they're further up.
Godzilla is his enemy, you know? Maybe Godzilla thinks he's tougher, just Bloodsport as he is. Have you seen Godzilla Final Wars? Because that's a really, really good film.
I have not seen it, no.
You should see Godzilla Final Wars. It's really good. It's a little bit slow at times, and there's some like plot twists or plot devices which I think are excellent, but might seem like really fucking haphazard writing, which is my favorite kind. They've got like the Earth Defense Force, or whatever the fuck they call it, flying around in these like flying submarine tanks that also can drill through the Earth. And they're actually not a mention of the film. They actually exist in previous Godzilla films, apparently. Has Godzilla fighting every monster he's already fought in Godzilla films. Doing this, like, world tour of monster fighting.
to any particular... Know, right? Like, is there some...
Without giving away some of the fun twists. But, yeah, Godzilla fights a lot of people.
What happens if, when you're like 50 or 60, to get to 80, you have to fight everyone you ever got into a conflict with in your life in one massive brawl. Like, you just hit middle-aged, and then there's that kid you fought in primary school, and that guy who attacked you in the streets, and someone you get into an argument with in work, and they're all there, and they formed a league against you, and you have to battle them just to get to, just to keep surviving.
That would be tricky, because you'd be like, wait, how old are you when you have to do this?
50.
That's tricky, because you're not in your physical prime. I mean, I guess you just have to rely on, like, concealing knives on you, or, you know, having guns, or, like, you know, facial features.
I was thinking about, like a Hollywood movie which has in it two actual, as characters, Hollywood stars, because I was thinking, if you walked out into the street in Los Angeles and you saw Matt Damon and Hugh Jackman, like, stripped to the waist trying to stab each other to death in the street in the middle of the day, you'd just be like, oh, this is good. Which means that if you're a Hollywood star and you want to murder physically with your own hands other Hollywood stars, and you do that for like a day, you can probably get away with it because people will just assume it's a film. Like, if you just attack like Tom Cruise and try and beat him to death, no one's going to try and stop you.
Well, yeah, but yeah, for a variety of reasons. But don't they have? But they have bodyguards and shit, right?
You know? Yeah, that's true.
And like you know, lots of Hollywood stars have like done like, you know, 3 weeks intensive Krav Maga training for like the new Born Identity film. Most of the time, they learned it from people who were like their bodyguards, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't really know what Matt Damon looks like. I mean,
it looks kind of like a brick. It's like a brick with a face.
Isn't he like that guy who's in that film called Drive, but his face is a bit more pudgy?
I don't think so.
But who's that guy? Ryan Gosling. Yeah, like Matt Damon just kind of looks like Ryan Gosling, but like
fat
like
melted. Ryan...
Like someone was trying to make it like chippy version of Ryan Gosling. But hadn't really done it yet, had just done the first kind of sketch where they kind of like round out the lines a little bit, make his eyes.
He does, yeah. There was a kid at university who you used to call Fat Matt Damon because he looked like a plumper version of Matt Damon, so that thing extended again.
Yeah.
I think that became his common name, but he never heard about it, but that's just how people would refer to him who didn't know him.
Isn't it weird that you might have these nicknames you have no idea about them? Someone will, like, drunkenly, you know, refer to someone, and you're like, who's that? And then they go, oh, that's horrible. And then you realize it's you. That man. Which reminds me of something, and I've just forgotten, what was it, Matt Damon? Nicknames? Stabbings? Well, that wasn't really worth remembering. 80s films and jewel thieves. I mentioned this on my G Plus feed and no one reacted to it, and so I'm going to use it again. I was drawing or something, and my friends were over, the ones from Australia who won the Verbal Arts Award. And they were watching Pretty in Pink or something, and I just kind of went, this is an 80s film, are they jewel thieves? And they're like, shut up. And then a while later, they are jewel thieves.
In Pretty in Pink, really?
How many 80s films do have jewel thief plots? Like, so many of them. Like, Goonies, that has jewel thief plots.
Oh, yeah.
Does it?
I think so, yeah, because even if it doesn't at the beginning, by the end, they're trying to steal, like, by de facto, there are jewels amongst the pirate's hoard. So, yeah.
They've just robbed a bank, that's right, but... Not quite the kind of like, oh, and these diamonds, or, you know, some of these films are driven by, like, I think it was because, I mean, you could have criminals after people, but they weren't, like, you didn't have to have anything messy, like a murder, or, like,
or drugs.
Serial dismemberment. And, I mean, and diamonds and jewels are really valuable, but they could be, like,
anywhere.
Just look, yeah, and they look, or they could just be a pair of earrings, such as Pretty in Pink, like, the jewels that people are looking for actually look like these earrings, so a character can have them and not even think about, you know, anything about them.
That's interesting.
I feel like there's some other notable examples. And I think definitely lots of kids' things, you know? Like, if they wanted to have some criminals, that'd be jewel thieves.
Yeah, there's a Agatha Christie plot where there's a missing diamond and there's a guy who never lights his pipe throughout the entire plot. And at the end, it turns out the diamond was in the pipe.
I love how those rule that murder mysteries happen in, like, both people, like, every regular people are perfectly willing if sufficiently motivated. Not even motivated that much. They're like, you know, like all those murder ones that people are like, oh, it's too much hassle to leave my wife. I'll just kill her so I can marry someone else. And you're kind of like, well, how much hassle is it? Like, is it really, like, get away from the hassle? Another thing is, like, everyday people, and, like, yeah, the people doing the murdering aren't, like, typical murderers, so they don't have a history of antisocial behavior or, like, you know, they're not, like, they manage to be completely emotionally functional people up until this time, and then they're fucking being able to fucking callously kill someone, and then lie to the police without...
Really well. Like, really, yeah, like a trained sociopath.
Yeah, like, most people can't lie, you know, like, fucking, like, lie to the police about speeding, let alone fucking have a complicated story about why you weren't there when they got fucking looted by Triceratops, like, spring-loaded action figure or whatever. And also that people just don't really care that people get murdered. Like, when there's a murder happens, they're like, oh, your sister got murdered. And it's like, oh, no. like their sister's lost their job or something. Like, that, that, kind of like, you know, or like, that they missed out, they got fired or something.
They've moved to Australia.
Also, and they're kind of amazing. I think Broadchurch was one of the few films I've seen recently, film series, that actually kind of had people be fucked up by murder.
Yeah.
And actually kind of, oh, horrible, you know, and just how just like lives are ruined, and you know.
Wasn't the secret to Broadchurch that everyone's a pedo? I just remember watching it, and the undercurrent for Broadchurch was like the British recent history background of like Jimmy Savile and various horrible like revelations about paedophilia. So like the fear underneath those shows is always like that everyone's a pedo. The priest might be a pedo. David Tennant might be a pedo. That guy in the shot might be a pedo. Fucking everyone. So the camera just scans past them doing this, and they're like, "Well, who's the real pedo?" And then you find out at the end.
Don't give it away.
I won't.
I like it had fucking the Doctor Who guy, and like that fans of Doctor Who might have just watched
it. No.
And then they watch this fucking heavy ass fucking detective series, you know. And if you like your normal kind of level of like emotionally affecting drama is Doctor Who, and then you go to Broadchurch, I feel like it's kind of like a bit of a fucking like when there's like child murder and just everyone's fucked up and crying and shitty and British and all the time, and you know, and Doctor Who has stubble. He's got stubble.
Yeah.
Because you know,
there's a bit where Doctor Who meets an actor who played one of the companions of Doctor Who, and I think when I watched it, I think everyone, you can't get through that scene either if you're acting in it or directing it or watching it on the TV without everyone going, oh look, it's Arthur Daverill from Doctor Who and he's meeting David Tennant. Like, there's no way to punch through that fucking that response.
You know about New Zealand's, like, I don't know so much now, but for a while if you're a New Zealand actor, you were going to be in Shortland Street, and you're going to be in Xena, and you're going to be in Hercules. It's just the fucking rule. Just like, you know, so you just got so used to seeing like someone playing you know, the cafe owner in Shortland Street, and then they'll fucking be like an evil fucking scorpion warrior in Xena, and be someone in Hercules. And then there's Tamara Morrison, who most people know is fucking Boba Fett's dad, I guess. But everyone in New Zealand knew first as Dr. Ropata from Shortland Street, you know, who was this doctor, you know, he was this kind of like hotshot doctor who'd recently been in like refuge camps, like saving lives, and then he's throwing his raid around Shortland Street, and there's this epic line where Nurse Ratched, whatever, was like, "You're not in Guatemala now, Dr. Ropata." Like, iconic. So there was that in the New Zealand consciousness. And he also played Jake the Musk in Once Were Warriors, which I don't know if you've seen, but it's fucking a grim as shit about, like, you know, kind of alienated and sort of, like, you know, sort of, like, fucked up Maori, like, in like, South Auckland, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, domestic abuse and cycles of abuse and stuff. And that's really, you know, that's It seems kind of heavy-handed now, but, you know, it's still him just being this fucking terrifying wife beater, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a scene where he glasses someone and stuff, and, you know, he's a pedo, to bring it back to our conversation topic.
Yeah.
And then for him to be in, like, Star Wars, you know? So he's revealed as this Boba Fett guy, you know? Like,
it's him off Shortland Street, yeah.
I think the average news... He's kind of thinking, like, one of fucking Dr. Robata and two of Jake the Mus, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so Boba Fett's Dr. Robata. What? Boba Fett's Jake the Mus.
There's a scene like that in the original Star Wars where there's one of the Imperial officers. There's a British series called Grange Hill, which is kind of died recently, but ran for a long time from the 70s and started off as like a... It was BBC being socially relevant, and it was like a big deal because they would like have kids that were on drugs and kids that had like surreal social problems. And the headmaster was called Mr. Bronson, and he was a hard case. And everyone knew Mr. Bronson because if you were a kid watching Grange Hill, he was like the continuous character. And he turns up in the original Star Wars as like an Imperial officer. So everyone who's ever watched Grange Hill... When they go to like the fucking Star Destroyer and a guy turns around, he's like, what's going on? Everyone goes, oh, it's Mr. Bronson from Grange Hill. He's in space.
Wasn't Grange Hill always being like flipping heck, like, you better leg it, you know? Or cheese it. Was it? What were they always saying? Like, we better cheese it, you know? We're being caught, like,
I don't think they ever went that far. There's a long tradition of like anarchic bullying in British. Children's like in British kids comics, like one of the biggest characters is called Dennis the Menace, and what Dennis the Menace did for his entire existence was to bully a guy called Walter, who was called Walter the Softy, and his excuse for bullying him was that he wore shorts and a bow tie and had his hair slicked over and was a bit soft, and that's like literally the fucking basis of the character.
And Wizard and Core and Chips and all that shit. Like, you know, I remember reading them as kids because I used to get them at garage sales and like comic shops and stuff. And but yeah, and that weird thing of like the villains and those or like wimps or kind of like they were kind of like the negative traits were like richness and softness and pontiness and stuff. And the heroes are always, like, kind of messy and dirty and broke the rules and stuff, like Dennis the Menace, you know? And it was weird because I didn't think, like, British... It was, like, the class war aspect of it was really interesting because, like, American comics just never had that shit. Another thing that used to blow my mind as a kid is American comics, which were American comics, and then Judge Dredd in 2018, where, like, American comics had Spider-Man, like, crying because he punched someone and they fell off something and they died or something. And Judge Dredd had, like, you know, like, people just, like, casually, like, getting, like, nuked and stuff and people dying. And it was just, like, there was no more. I am the law and you'd shoot people and then arrest someone else. And then, like, some people would be seen to, like, the fucking die in the radioactive waste and stuff. And it was awesome. And then the ABC Warriors and then, like... that series that they had about people going back in time to eat dinosaurs and then, like, they went out extinct because, like, human beings ate them all in the future because they're lacking meat. It was just, like, so nihilist in comparison to American stuff.
Apparently all of the people who made 2000 AD grew up on, like, kid... They didn't grow up, but they started their careers in kids' comics and they had to write stories about, like, Jenny the Dance Star whose rabbit escapes... Or fucking Topper Johnson, who became the best racer ever. And they had to do that for like 20 years. Yeah. And then someone let them write 2000 AD, and that's just their business and rage spewing out.
Wow. What's that? Boys on annual, girls on annual. Kind of dark. I remember one that was like, it was like the Suicide Squad or something. And it was like an elite team of British World War II pilots who would always like do the most dangerous missions. And the end of each comic strip, they would, like, whoever was starring in it would die, you know? So they just kind of introduce a new character. And at the end of the strip, they fucking, like, Super Zeppelin would blow up or something. And it was great. And there was this spider who was really cool. It was just this vaguely elfin-looking evil genius. And then the decided to be good because they found it because he was basically cooler than everyone else. So they were just like, "Oh, we're just making the protagonist now." And it's one of my memories actually is reading a comic on the Spider because I was when I was about 3 or 4, my parents were going around Europe like doing the big party, and then I think my first year of school was at an English school in Sheffield, and I got like my tonsils out or some shit, or had some other operation, and was in the hospital and reading these like annual comics of the Spider, this fucking jumping genie head, which was like fucking craft. It was like, it's kind of like a fucking metal ball of legs, and it would bounce around, and it looked fucking stupid. And I remember as a kid going, "That shit looks bizarre. What is this? This is amazing." And that was my formative experience. And fucking JR and Quinch was the other 2000 AD thing that moved me.
Oh, that's Alan Moore. It's early Alan Moore.
I was really surprised to discover, like, that was Alan. Did he do some of the Nemesis the Warlock? No, he did some of the other ones that I remember being stood by. But yeah, these two aliens just killing people for fun, and that was the comic, you know? Which is like, run over a beach with a combine harvester or something. And it wasn't kind of like a... It wasn't really like a slapstick kind of South Park kind of way. It was... I don't know, it was... It didn't take the same distancing that you see, like, really, like, that kind of humor now, you know? Like, that make it, you know, like, you'd have happy tree fiends or something, and it has distancing by having them be, like, really cartoony, and just, I don't know. It was one of those things that I remember kind of, like, not liking, but liking, that kind of, like, oh, this is kind of fucked up. I don't know. This kind of makes me feel gross inside, but also I really like it.
That seems like a powerful emotion for you, Scrap.
Yeah.
And a definitive one.
I think that's definitely, like, what lots of my aesthetics now, and, like, you know, like, all the things that kind of made me go, "Oh, God, I can't handle this," with, like, the shit that, like, now I go, "Yeah, that shit was good," you know? I was like, "You know, this is cool." It's shit that I go, "That was so fucking stupid."
Okay, do you want to round this off by saying one more thing about bees?
Bees don't sting you. Yeah, like, so you can just put your hand on bees. You should just literally stick your face in bees